Joining us on the WBGO Journal is the founder and executive director of the Amish Heritage Foundation, Tora Bontrager. Great to see you.
Thanks so much for having me. Thank you.
You have such an interesting story to tell. And the backdrop here is there's going to be a conference being held at Columbia University on Saturday, November 16th, called Overturning Wisconsin versus Yoder, Making Education a Federal Right for All Children. Let's start with your background and tell us what happened to you.
Well, I was born and raised traditional Amish, and at age 15, I escaped in the middle of the night in order to go to high school. That was one of the driving forces, reasons for me to escape. And Wisconsin versus Yoder is very intimately connected to me because I was born in the community, in the Amish community, where the protests that led up to Yoder started.
Explain the U.S. Supreme Court case, Wisconsin versus Yoder, which you are hoping to overturn through the Amish Heritage Foundation.
Yes, so it's a case in which Amish parents felt that they did not want their children to be in school until age 16, which was Wisconsin's compulsory attendance law. So they protested that, and it went up to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, which sided rightfully on this on the side of the children and said that, no, we cannot make an exemption for religion in this case. We need our children educated. But then a special interest committee stepped in, a group that decided that, in my opinion, were interested in seeing how far that they could push the free exercise clause. And the Amish agreed to take it up with the U.S. Supreme Court in exchange for their legal bills to be covered by this special interest group.
This was all the way back in 1972, this ruling. So, in your opinion, when you do some research and you look into this, many people think that this probably would have been overturned by now, but it hasn't. And you're in the process of wanting to see that happen. Tell us about that.
It's coming up on 50 years in 2022, and it's time that this is overturned. I believe one of the reasons why no one has challenged it is because it seems such an Amish-centric case. And by virtue of not being educated, we Amish don't have the resources or ability to protest this or to challenge this. Only some of us ever exit the community, even less of us go on to get a college degree. I'm one of the few people that I'm aware of that even went to an Ivy League university. So this is pretty unusual, and we need someone who is educated to be able to take this up with the Supreme Court and get it overturned.
Let's go back to the day that you left. You were 15. You had to be scared to death.
Yeah, I say that it was a life or death situation for me. A lot of people will usually say, wow, that was brave. And yes, of course, there was bravery involved, but I was so desperate for something better. I did not have a happy childhood. I had particularly abusive parents. Not all Amish parents are as abusive as mine were, but that was the situation I was in. I tried to kill myself once when I was around 14. I put a gun up to my head, and that was the first time in my life that I had the thought, oh, I want to live instead of I want to die. So that was a pivotal moment for me. And from that point on, I kept trying even more to figure out how to escape successfully.
How many people have reached out to you through the years since you did, as you call it, escape, that want to do a similar thing?
Not very many. And the reason for that is we're so isolated and sheltered. We have no internet, no electricity, no vehicles. We don't speak English as our first language either. A lot of people aren't aware of that. So there are all these barriers that hold us in, that keep us from being able to reach outside. We also aren't aware that we actually have rights, that we're U.S. citizens with rights above what Amish church dictates. So I'm branded as someone who is a bad influence and who's going to hell. So that's difficult for people inside the community to kind of figure out, is she someone we can trust? Is she a good person or a bad person? However, with the advent of social media, when Facebook, for example, opened up to the public, that was when I started getting a lot more connection and outreach. All of a sudden, there was a way for us to get connected. So as much as, you know, social media has its negative sides, it also has a very useful purpose. And so lots of people have reached out to me. Lots of people follow me on Facebook. You know, they have secret Facebook accounts, including those who are baptized. Some of them are out partying. Others are baptized and still breaking the rules. And they're watching. And I get reports from people inside the community who are sort of liaisons for me who will say what the impact is, which is very encouraging.
We're speaking with Tora Bontrager, who is the founder and executive director of the Amish Heritage Foundation. There is the second annual conference, Overturning Wisconsin versus Yoder, Making Education a Federal Right for All Children, coming up at Columbia University on Saturday, November 16th. You mentioned that you did not have a happy childhood, but how was the transition for you once you got away from the Amish faith and community? How difficult was it for you to integrate yourself, especially at an age that's so, you know, everything's happening?
I embraced it. So for me, it was not a culture shock, the typical experience that a lot of people go through. I was ready for it. And keep in mind that I had decided at age 11 I was going to escape. So I was preparing myself for 4 years. And one of the thoughts I had was, how do I make this transition easier for me? I need to learn about the outside as much as possible. So I would read the daily newspaper, the little 1,000 population town newspaper, to try to learn about the outside world. So by the time I did escape, even though there it was like an entirely different planet to me, I was excited and happy.
Any contact with any member of your family since you left?
For the first 13 years, I tried to create a friendly relationship with my parents, but I finally realized that was a dead end, that it was a one-way street. It was one of the hardest things that I had to come to terms with, was that, yeah, your birth parents don't really care, and to accept that and move on, and to also know that none of my siblings saw that what I did was right for me. I mean, they subscribed to my parents' religious views. And interestingly enough, my parents themselves resigned from the Amish church 5 years after I did. But they're going to heaven and I'm going to hell because I don't subscribe to their version of religion.
How many siblings?
I'm the oldest of 11.
And nobody sides with you?
No one.
How disappointing is that for you?
It was excruciating. It was the only reason I went back for 13 years was to let my siblings know that, number one, I existed. Number two, I'm not the bad person that you're being told I am by the parents. And number three, I'm here if you want to escape as well. Like, you don't have to go it alone or be alone in the world. And, I had to... thankfully, you know, learned a lot of good things in life, in school, at Columbia, and some philosophy and classes helped me with sort of coming to terms with that. You know, in the end, you can't do anyone else's work for them. They have to walk their own path, and that was what I had to come to terms with.
And that being said, did you have somebody that you could turn to, you know, at college that helped you, you know, realize some things and helped you get through this?
I found a lot of answers in Tibetan Buddhist philosophy once I got to Columbia that was sort of the major religion or worldview in terms of religious beliefs that I hadn't looked at. And I was on this quest for truth, having come from such a black and white religion that did not make sense to me. I was really, really driven to find out the truth. What's the truth? And when I started studying Tibetan Buddhist philosophy, I was told the truth is not absolute. So that was pretty disappointing. It was like, wow, there's no answer really. And things are relative. There's gray areas in the world. And so even though I don't call myself a Buddhist at all today, I appreciate a lot of the philosophy, and it does guide me.
As the founder and executive director of the Amish Heritage Foundation, why did you want to associate yourself with the word Amish then as a foundation if you wanted to break away?
Well, Amish is more than a religion. It's a culture. It's a language. And it's important to me that we retain the positive parts of our heritage. A lot of us who do manage to escape or leave or resign, whichever one it is, have been so wronged or feel so wronged that we don't see any good in our heritage. And I have never been, have never seen it that way. I've always recognized how much of an asset knowing more than one language is. And just other things like growing our own food. I know that if the worst thing happens, if disaster strikes, I can light a fire, I can cook my own food, I can grow my own food. So I love that. I love that independence, those skills. And that's what I want to emphasize is like, look, we have really, really beautiful aspects to our heritage. Let's keep those things. Let's just clean up the bad parts.
Other than overturning Wisconsin versus Yoder, what are some of the goals of the foundation?
We would like to help Amish entrepreneurs or just the Amish community in general to learn new skills that will help them compete in the 21st century. So that's very important. You know, sustainable agriculture or, you know, new maybe hemp farming. There's actually a lot going on in Lancaster County right now with that. And helping women become more self-sufficient is very important.
How many people are involved in the foundation right now?
It's an all-volunteer-run organization right now. Hopefully that will change when we start getting grants in. And I would say it's probably about a dozen volunteers altogether that are connected to the foundation.
Tell us about the second annual conference that's coming up on November 16th. There are a number of speakers, including yourself, who will be talking about all kinds of things that are related to the Wisconsin versus Yoder decision and other decisions like it, right?
Yes. So the emphasis of the conference is that this overturning Yoder matters to everyone. This is an issue that is not only about Amish children. It's about everyone's child because the federal courts don't even actually hold that any citizen has a right to an education. And we're arguing, you know, me and our team of pro bono attorneys are arguing that this is unconstitutional. So although the Constitution does not explicitly say that a citizen is entitled to education, there are such things, explicit rights that we do have that can't be fulfilled without an adequate education. So that's where we're coming from. And we're bringing in speakers from other religious backgrounds and other educational backgrounds to demonstrate that this is an issue for everyone. It affects public school students, private students, parochial and homeschooled students from any religion, ultra-Orthodox Jewish, Islamic, Mormon, Jehovah's Witness, Baptist, Evangelical, Christian, you name it.
Do you like being called a trailblazer?
Do I like being called a trailblazer?
Has anybody ever said that to you?
I'm very honored that you are suggesting that. Thank you. I have thought of myself as a pioneer, probably because in my Amish childhood, that was the word I saw. I never saw a trailblazer, but, you know, I would read stories about pioneers. So, yeah.
What are you looking forward to most about the conference?
I'm really excited to see what the response from the public is going to be, the attendees and the public in general. I really really want to see the conversation take off. It's really, really important.
Now, there's also going to be an Amish teenager who is also sharing his story of escaping as well. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. So this teenager is in his final year of high school, I believe his final year. And he escaped when he was, I think, 17 and did not go to school right away. He got a construction job because that's about the only job that's available as an Amish child or a male especially. And at some point, he got the idea that he could go to school. And he did tell me what inspired him, and I forgot exactly what it was, but it was kind of random. Like, he was interested in getting his, saw that he needed to get a GED for some career things, and then just, somebody mentioned something to him about going to high school or college, and that resonated with him. And so the family that he's with who took him in, I call them my Underground Railroad family. they were very happy to hear that he wanted to go to high school and have put him into a great alternative school. And he's loving it. And this kid is going to be amazing. And this is exactly what, we're about at the Amish Heritage Foundation. We want to help the kids inside to become whatever it is that they dream of becoming and to not feel that they're limited, to open their minds to more choices in life and help them on that path.
This is probably a difficult question, but what do you think it will take to overturn Wisconsin versus Yoder?
Public support. It won't take much. It just takes people speaking out and saying, yes, I believe a child should have the right to learn.
How optimistic are you at this point?
I am quite optimistic. I'm more optimistic than I was when I started out less than a year ago. I was prepared to not see this overturn in my lifetime. If I fought this for my entire lifetime, I was willing to do that. But I feel that it might not take quite that long.
Is there somebody at Columbia University that's also helping you in this whole ordeal?
Yes, absolutely. Our keynote speaker, Professor Michael Rebell, has been amazing. He actually filed a lawsuit against the state of Rhode Island last year for failing to prepare public school students for citizenship. So he's taking the public education angle and going at it on a state level, but also federal. He talks about, state versus federal laws. And I also am very grateful for some mentorship from the Dean Emeritus of Columbia College, Professor Roger LaHecca. He's been amazing as well. And he does a lot of work with low-income and first-generation students. And so that's a nice compliment to have both of those professors.
You have such a story to tell and only so much time, either being on the radio or being at a conference, that you got to boil it down. But I would imagine in the world that we are living in right now, I would imagine that your story is going to resonate with everyone, but especially women.
I hope so. I hope so. One of the things that is a huge emphasis at the Amish Heritage Foundation, which I hadn't mentioned, was that we're working on sexual assault. Cleaning that up inside the Amish church. And so that's a lot of work that we're doing. I'm a sexual assault survivor, repeat survivor. My family members, assaulted me. That really was like jumping out of the fire into the frying pan or out of the frying pan into the fire after my escape. So that's something that still hasn't been resolved in my own cases, and I'm working on that behind the scenes because of ongoing investigations. I've been very surprised in the past year to see how many women inside the Amish church have reached out and have expressed that they're fed up with the sexual assault that's going on inside the church. They don't want to leave the church, and they shouldn't have to. I mean, we shouldn't have to lose everything, the only world we've ever known, just in order to escape abuse, which is often what has happened in the past, is keep your mouth shut or and endure it or leave. But these women are starting to stand up for themselves and saying, this is enough. So hopefully, in a year from now or over the course of the next year, there'll be more things we can share publicly about some of those cases. There's an overall sort of just fed upness of what's been happening for so many generations. I don't know what's going on, but there's sort of like a tipping point that we've reached where enough people are just fed up, both men and women, and they're ready to stand up and do whatever it takes to stop this, because they've seen the negative effects it's had on their own lives, and that we can't let this continue happening to our children. So yeah, it's pretty surprising and encouraging to see the responses.
You're standing in front of the Supreme Court now. What do you want to tell them?
Wow, you want me to say what came to my mind?
Yeah,
like,
sure.
How dare you have ruled against the children? How dare you? It's beyond criminal. You force a child to stop learning. That is just criminal.
Those who want more information about the conference, where can they go?
You can go to www.amishheritage.org/conference, and that will get you all the information.
Tora Bontrager is the founder and executive director of the Amish Heritage Foundation. Is there anything else you'd like to tell our listeners?
Just thank you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for your support. If you're interested in helping out, you can visit our website, or if you know of anyone who needs help, send them our way. Even if you're not Amish, we will help you. And certainly, if you're someone who's working on educational advocacy projects, we'd love to hear from you and collaborate.
No matter where you stand on this issue, you can't deny that you are extremely brave.
Thank you.